The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. A Disney downer. The stock seeing its worst day since 2022 after warning that two major pillars of its business are under pressure. The news fully erasing 3 months' worth of gains. Can the entertainment giant get its magic back, or should investors just let it go? Plus, the apple of our eye, the tech giant unveiling a new slate of iPads this afternoon. But it's a stock chart that caught the attention of our traders. Is the company back on track and heading toward new records? We'll debate that. Plus, Tim is flexing his bicep after Lyft's earnings. Starbucks still struggling, now down 18% since earnings last week. And why someone, not naming names, thinks now may be the perfect time to short Tesla. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Guy Adami, and Dan Nathan from the Milken Conference in Los Angeles. We start off with a 9.5% drop in Disney after earnings this morning. Even as the entertainment giant streaming business gets closer to profitability, a slight revenue miss, lower than expected guidance weighing on the stock. It had been the best performing Dow component this year up until today's plunge. It's now dropped to number 4. Leadership alluding to trouble in two tentpoles of Disney's business on the earnings call. First, there was CFO Hugh Johnston warning about the consumer, saying that while travel and demand still appear healthy, the company is seeing, quote, some evidence of a global moderation from peak post-COVID travel. Then there was CEO Bob Iger addressing future bumps in the road for streaming, admitting the path to profitability, quote, will not be linear. Disney expecting to post another streaming loss in the current quarter, but does expect to turn a profit in fiscal Q4. So with challenges facing two of the most critical parts of Disney's media empire, is this a sign that the magic has left the kingdom? Guy.
Well, you got some joke. What was it? Was that a Frozen thing?
Let it go.
Let it go.
That's what Elsa's saying. That's like her signature song.
The jokes around here are funny and clever, and I usually laugh.
You giggled. You're a participant and sometimes a viewer as well. The magic was never really back. The cost cutting got the magic back in terms of the stock, but they never really addressed the core issues that they were having. And we said it last night, or we said it a week or so ago, that there would the two quarters of cost-cutting their way to profitability, they no longer would get a pass. It was going to be very hard to build upon the gains that the stock saw. And it actually went to levels that I thought. 5x normal volume, that's a good sign. But there's probably a little more downside here. But I don't think you're looking for a place to sell it. You're trying to figure out, like, what's the right level. Again, it's probably another 6, 7% from where we are. But we're not that far away, I don't think.
Heavy volume meaning good sign because
I believe
be
it's a good sign. Yeah.
Karen.
I can't help but wonder the timing of this release relative to the proxy fight, right? They had such a strong quarter going into the proxy fight, and now that it's over, not such a strong quarter. So I don't know. I find that, I mean, maybe that's just me being overly, you know, conspiracy theorist or something. I find it a little, I don't know. I'm surprised actually haven't heard from Nelson Peltz. Never shy, right? So I don't know. You know, I doubt he's coming back to do anything aggressive. There's nothing to do. The meeting's over. But it's just sort of interesting to me. So then we just get back to, all right, well, what is the right price for this company, right? Clearly, they have some issues, but they obviously have three tremendous businesses. Sometimes they don't all operate on all cylinders at all times. But I do think that the valuation here is, it's okay. It's not great. I feel like there could be some more downside here.
If you're a believer that the consumer is going to continue to be increasingly strained as the year progresses, then that's not a great thing for Disney. I mean, 52% of its operating profit is experiences, which is mostly theme park.
Yeah, I don't think we've priced that into Disney. I don't think we've priced a slower consumer. I don't think we've priced cyclicality in essentially the media business overall. I think what I hear Guy and Karen saying is that this is as much about a tough comp as you know, you can talk about whether the proxy fight was a reason to throw a lot of stuff in there. That last quarter really had something in it for everybody. And that's part of what I think is hurting the stock right now. I think the content costs came in, there was a loss. There was a big loss on content. I think that was a big deal. I think that was something people didn't expect. I think studio's been slower. I think the summer box office is not expected to be very strong. And I think they came out of a gangbusters period in terms of parks that is going to be tough to duplicate anytime soon. So I just think that the streaming losses dynamic is still the most important part of the story. And while we got good news over the last two quarters and last quarter, again, we were given this bright light at the end of the tunnel. And I just think that that's the issue here. I think it's an opportunity for the stock. I think I've also heard other people say that.
Is it an opportunity, Dan, or is that bright light dimmed for the foreseeable future?
Probably not. I mean, I think Guy kind of highlighted some of the levels there. That gap from last quarter is going to get filled in. It's on its way to doing that. And just listening to the guys and gals talk about how they perceive the quarter and the guidance, you can go back a quarter when the stock broke out to new 52-week highs, and you say to yourself, that was very company and stock specific, why that stock rallied that way. Now, if you look at this quarter and this guidance and what Tim just said, difficult comps, right? And now you can extrapolate it a little bit more to the consumer, right? And basically the environment that they are starting to see. So unless they are basically trying to blame this poor performance after such a great quarter that had a lot more to do with what they were doing on the cost side and streaming, so 3 months out, to me, that's not a great story. And then I want to move it out to the consumer discretionary. Look at a Home Depot. We're going to get a lot of retail earnings over the next couple of weeks or so. That stock does not act particularly well. It's down 15% from its recent highs here. And I think if you want to start piecing some of this stuff together on the consumer front, it's probably setting up for a more challenging second half, I think, for a lot of these consumer discretionary companies.
I just wanted to add one more thing about that. This was the results for the quarter ending March 30th, right? The annual meeting was April 2nd or so. So they had to have some sense of how this current quarter was going.
Oh.
You would think.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Just adding that to the, it's a little odd.
Well, I think Guy loves to play this game, and you know we don't play games without Melissa's consent.
But you were about to do it, though.
I'll describe the game you like to play sometimes with consent, because you don't act on your own. But is that if you told me the news, could I tell you what the stock price was going to do?
Yes.
And if you told me that Disney, who has a plus 25% year-over-year EPS growth, guides up on the year and shows, you know, it tells you that their linear business sucks. We knew that. Like that. Sorry for that. I look at the softer linear biz, and I know what's going on with linear TV. The most important thing here really is streaming and DTC, and those numbers were not terrible.
I guess, you know, earnings are sort of in the eye of the beholder, right? I mean, when I looked at Disney's earnings this morning, I thought, oh, consumer looks soft. Consumer, you depend on the consumer for most of your business when it comes to the theme parks.
And streaming
and
also.
Streaming too. Mm-hmm. And then also streaming, it's going to be a winding path to profitability. So you've got the cash generator under pressure. You've got the growth business with an uncertain path. And what do you have? A stock that's down 10%.
Karen, you're spot on with that. But maybe they thought that this was a pretty benign quarter and you weren't going to get the move. Because, listen, EPS beat, revenue slight miss. I mean, subscription number's not great, but not a disaster. I mean, they probably thought, you know, given the way the stock had been trading, this was not going to happen, which might be one of the reasons they didn't address it. With that said, they should know. It's their business to know, right? So I think a lot of it was given the run that the stock had. Clearly, a lot of it was the fact that the Netflix quarter by itself was very good. It wasn't the quarter that scared everybody in Netflix. It was all the things they said subsequent to the quarter. So when you compare those two things, I think it makes a little sense. But I do think there's a level to buy it. And the level is that gap that was created back in February. And if I'm not mistaken, comes right in around 98.5, 99, which is basically what we said earlier in the show.
The other backdrop, though, and we were discussing this before the show, is that Disney earnings don't happen in a vacuum. And we're hearing these cautious comments about the consumer at Disney specifically, not in a vacuum. And we heard this similar thoughts from Starbucks. We heard a little bit from Nike. We heard it from McDonald's. All these consumers are under pressure. A wide swath of consumers are looking at how they spend money. They're reducing their ticket sizes. And that's a worry.
I think it's an interesting look up at the horizon and see some of the most iconic companies in America who in the past have been very defensive in some of these periods. And if you think about the consumer, really, for a lot of Disney, absolutely for Starbucks, this is a case for Nike. I mean, this is not necessarily the low end consumer. I mean, this is a consumer that typically has discretionary income. And we're hearing that there's still a lot of discretionary income. We know what the job report told us. So, yeah, that's fascinating. I think what we have heard from lower end continues to be the story. And this is really, isn't this the conversation we thought we were going to have a year ago when we really thought that the economy was going to be facing significant headwinds in 24? It's now 24. It's all playing out a lot slower. And it gets to this place where are the multiple on the S&P, which is 21 forward, does it deserve it in this backdrop?
So the consumer's in the spotlight. Dan, questions around the consumer. We have NVIDIA on deck. We've got a lot ahead here in terms of a potential, headwinds, tape bombs, whatever you want to call it, for the markets in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's a certain sense of irony that, all this inflation is likely the thing that causes the slowdown, right? So we know that companies have been able to pass through a lot of those increased costs that they're facing, those input costs. But now it does seem to feel like the long invariable lags that we heard so much about with this higher rate environment to kind of combat the inflation might be the very thing that slows us down. And so, like, to me, I just feel like you got to listen to each one of these conference calls and you got to hear what these companies have to say and you got to attach the dots here. But I also feel like now that we're through the bulk of S&P 500 earnings, to your point about like NVIDIA, so much of this market, at least the stock market, in my opinion, is relying on this generative AI trade. Google, Amazon, good results. Meta got hit because of the spending there. People are optimistic about what Apple might do. So it goes back to some of these larger components of the S&P 500. And now here we are. We have this date. It's May 22nd. It feels like deja vu all over again. We were doing this in February, right? Coming out of earnings season. And it really feels like if the data, the economic data, just stays where it is, it feels like the entire rally that we have year to date is going to be predicated on how investors perceive the guidance from NVIDIA.
All right, let's bring in Julia Boorstin for more color on Disney's quarter and specifically the streaming strategy. Julia, I'm just curious, when you listen to the conference call, these comments that sort of put the markets into it, not the markets, but the stock into a tailspin, seemed a little bit even off the cuff, not totally serious. They were sort of mentioned, and there was like only one follow-up question regarding the consumer and the return to post-COVID spending when it comes to the theme parks. The comment about the path to profitability on streaming not being linear, that didn't seem all too surprising either. What was your take on how that was handled?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that Disney has been very clear that they expect to hit full streaming profitability by the end of their fiscal year. That means the entertainment, which is Disney Plus and Hulu division, and also ESPN Plus. It was a positive surprise that they hit streaming profitability with $47 million in revenue for the entertainment piece of that, which is Hulu and Disney Plus. They did say that they're going to drop out of profitability in this next quarter, the fiscal third quarter, before returning to full year profitability in Q4. So despite the upside surprise this quarter, they acknowledged the lumpiness, and it was really a warning about Q3. I think it's notable that there was also warning about the fiscal third quarter when it came to the parks also, that they expect flat operating income in the fiscal third quarter. So you have these warnings about the fiscal third quarter, and then the reassurance from, in this case, when it came to the parks, from CFO Hugh Johnson, that you're going to have a rebound in terms of profitability in the fiscal fourth quarter. So what this is really about here is lumpiness and the fact that we're no longer in this post-pandemic, everyone has all this pent-up demand for the theme parks phase. It's now a little bit less even. And then I think the same thing holds true for the streaming business. They're on this path to profitability. They're going to hit their targets, but it's not going to be sort of all unfettered growth. One thing that I think is really, really important to hit in the streaming business here is that Bob Iger overtly praised Netflix. He pointed out how long Netflix has been at this, and he said Netflix has had a lot of success with its crackdown on password sharing. We are going to do the same thing. He talked about rolling out that password sharing crackdown. And I think that he sees the opportunity here to follow in Netflix's footsteps. It's not often that you hear a CEO praising a rival like that. But I think it's a sort of proof of concept for him that that same kind of approach is going to work for Disney Plus.
Is there any aspect of seasonality about the fiscal third quarter, Julia? I'm just curious, since both of those businesses are going to see softness in that specific quarter.
Yeah, I mean, look, the fiscal third quarter is the spring, and then the fiscal fourth quarter is sort of the most important summer quarter, where you get a lot of benefit from the theme parks and also in terms of the box office. And I think they have some films they expect to be big hits this summer, including a Deadpool sequel. So there are all sorts of reasons why they may anticipate that, also in terms of comparisons as well. But what's so interesting for me, having seen Iger's sort of efforts to really transform the company, is that he really laid out the plan to address a lot of concerns raised by Nelson Peltz, but also to kind of accelerate things he probably would have done anyways. And now he's put all these changes into place, whether it's, you know, getting to profitability with streaming and launching a joint venture around sports streaming and having this ESPN flagship streaming service launch a year from now. But it takes a while for these changes to actually come to fruition. And I think we're in that kind of in-between period right now.
Hey, Julia, it's Tim. Fascinating to hear where maybe, you know, going after multiple subscribers is something that could be a catalyst for Disney. Do you get the sense that Disney's average revenue per user, or ARPU, is significantly below Netflix? And that's an issue. They're less profitable, at least in terms of what their core subscriber is paying and in terms of what that feeds through to the system. I almost get that sense. We see all these numbers, but when you break it down, they are bringing in, you know, Disney Plus is bringing in, I don't know, $7 a head. ESPN Plus is bringing in $6 a head and change. So any thoughts on that?
Well, I think what's really interesting, Tim, here is you're alluding to the fact that Disney has all these different services, right? They have Disney Plus, they have Hulu, they have ESPN Plus. Combined, that's a service that's really a competitor to what Netflix is. Disney Plus alone is more niche than what Netflix offers. One other thing that Iger teased to during this call is the fact that they're going to start introducing ESPN content within your Disney Plus app. And they want to sort of introduce those subscribers to Disney Plus to the ESPN Plus content, with the idea then it'll be easier to sell to them this additional subscription of the flagship ESPN product if people want to subscribe to that outside of a traditional TV bundle. So Iger is increasingly thinking about Disney Plus as a cohesive streaming platform for all of their content. And the changes they've made to really incorporate Hulu into that, I think, are part of it.
Julia, thanks. Julia Boorstin on Disney. And just quickly, it's Netflix's world, I guess, still, even according to Bob Iger.
No question. I mean, again, the Netflix, and put up a Netflix chart. I mean, look at the little stealth rally Netflix had since that cascade down to 540 or so. It's come back almost the entire move, which is a pretty good thing. And listen, I'm going to be watching a Ranger game tonight, in case you care.
Obviously.
But there will be cable shows.
She does. She cares?
No, she doesn't.
Not really.
No, she really doesn't care. You care.
She doesn't want to show her emotion, and I don't blame her.
That's, you know, she's a poker player.
Yeah.
But there will be shows that lead about, you know, go woke, go broke, one of the largest drawdowns in the history of Disney stock. And so Disney, and I'm not interested in either side of the equation, but they've become a bit of a political football as well. That obviously does not help them in this environment.
Coming up, earnings season rolls on. We've got a bunch of after-hours action to bring you. Rivian, Lyft, EA, Wynn, Occidental, all on the move. The details of the quarters next. Plus, Starbucks still dripping lower. Shares down more than 18%. That was a burst of laughter, Tim Seymour. Down 18% since last week's big earnings roast. Why there doesn't seem to be any bounce in this brew when Fast Money returns.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee. Right here on CNBC.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a news alert out of the UK border force system seeing a nationwide issue. Sadia Chowdhury is live at Heathrow Airport with all the details. Sadia.
Well, yeah, we don't know what has caused this issue, but we know that it's causing massive disruption at the border force. And we've had videos coming in to us from passengers who have said that some of them have had to wait 3 hours already, lengthy queues at some of the biggest airports in the UK, Heathrow, Gatwick, Manchester and Stansted, all being affected. And the issue that the Home Office has confirmed to us is with the e-gates. So these are the automated gates that people use when they're arriving in the UK. So this is for British passport holders, but also travellers from the EU and other countries like America. And this comes just 2 weeks after staff at Border Force held a four-day strike here at Heathrow Airport, causing massive disruption then. And under a year since the last time that we had problems with the e-gates. And that time, officers had to be deployed to check passports by hand, so those gates were all not in use. And that was for an entire, almost 24 hours it took for the queues to resolve that time. And so this time again, passengers facing lengthy queues and no signs of when this might get resolved.
Sadia, thank you. Sadia Chowdhury, and of course, we'll keep you all posted on any developments out of the UK there. Meantime, Lyft shares higher after earnings, but well off their best levels at the after-hours session. The rideshare company posting better than expected earnings, a revenue jump also of 28% from a year ago. The conference call is underway right now. Deirdre Bosa is listening in. She's got the very latest. Debo.
Hey, Mel, that conference call is underway, and they're just getting to the first question from the analysts. But so far, investors pleased with those results that beat on the top and bottom line and had a better-than-expected second-quarter outlook. CEO David Richery kicked off the call. He talked a lot about his strategy of customer obsession and driving profitable growth. To that point, Lyft is narrowing losses, and it was the second straight quarter that it has generated free cash flow. Still no timeline on GAAP profitability, but it's now expecting at least 70% of adjusted EBITDA to convert to free cash flow for the full year 2024. I spoke to David Richery just ahead of the results, and I asked him if he is seeing any signs of softness in the Lyft consumer. He said no. And in fact, looking at the ride mix, he says that premium modes are actually growing faster than the average. And this past quarter, they got an eclipse and an event bump in bookings, that helping those results. Lastly, Mel, Lyft's quarter, we got Uber tomorrow morning, so it may raise the stakes for its larger rival. Though, of course, Uber has a food delivery business, and that has been a more competitive space as of late with Dash, with Instacart, even Amazon in the mix there.
All right. Deirdre, thanks. Keep us posted. Deirdre Bosa covering Lyft for us tonight. It's the L in Tim's bicep, of course.
It's very generous.
It really is.
To slip in an L in my acronym when I've been so critical of Karen not playing
really
the acronym
have.
Game. Right. Yeah. It's fair enough. So let's talk about the company and let's talk about these numbers. I think it continues to be a story of normalization. I think it's a story where if you look at the gross bookings, they came in, you know, I don't know, 4.05, I think, versus 3.96 is where the street was. If you look at the adjusted EBITDA, I mean, this is a story of improved profitability. So the backdrop for Lyft was so much more in terms of the headwinds of COVID were things that hit Lyft significantly harder than they did Uber for all the obvious reasons, because they are not as diversified and they are not a super app. I think the story continues to get better. I think management has still a long way to go with the investment community in terms of credibility, in terms of their ability to predict their numbers and actually deliver on them.
Dan, Morgan Stanley just put out a note today saying that it likes the fact that Uber is multi-platform and it trades at a better multiple, the multiple that they use, which is free cash flow per adjusted growth, than Uber, excuse me, than Lyft or Instacart.
Well, it's interesting, Mel. You know, Uber, their profitability is really inflecting right now. Expected GAAP EPS growth of like 50% a year for the next couple of years. The problem right there is the sales growth. They expect to be mid-teens. But when I look at an Uber and I say to myself, and I know they're reporting tomorrow morning, if they can get their gross margins moving back towards those pre-COVID levels above 50%, then this stock could look pretty cheap in the not so distant future. You saw the deal that they just cut with Instacart today for delivery. They have about 25% market share. DoorDash has about 70% or so. So to me, I mean, Dara, the CEO of Uber, seems to be doing all of the right things in this post-COVID world. But I'm kind of with Tim in a way. I think that Lyft has a lot of optionality. And just so you know, the L was whatever my acronym was last year. It was in there. I just didn't stick with it this year. So good on you, Tim, with the bicep.
Yeah, there's not going to be a Z brawl
or Zelbra.
No. I mean,
there's no more adjustments now at this point to our acronyms.
Can I ask Tim a question?
Only
well, you're Karen okay. Feinerman.
All right. Would you change it to BUSEP if you could? You for Uber. Or you like the Ellen Blysep better?
Oh, I definitely like the Ellen Blysep. I mean, BUSEP sounds silly, but Blysep sounds so unsilly, right? No, I think, to me, Lyft is a story where they have significant ground to gain in terms of relative value. It's more expensive, but I think the normalization of their business is to come.
There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
The pour-over problems continue as the Starbucks stock drip doesn't seem to be getting any better. More on the grande-sized issues facing the coffee chain. Plus, AI overhyped? One legendary investor is cutting down on NVIDIA. Has the semi-surge come too far? And what could a pullback mean for the rest of the market? You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome back. An earnings alert on Dutch Brothers. Shares of the coffee chain surging after posting a much bigger than expected profit for its latest quarter and a beat on revenues. Meantime, Starbucks stock still sinking after its earnings last week. Shares down over 18% since that report and seemingly unable to catch any bounce back amid the pullback here. The company's seeing slumping sales, boycotts from pro-Palestinian supporters, even harsh criticism from former CEO Howard Schultz. Last week, we asked if the stock was so bad it's good. So far, not too many people think so. Guy, you said at some point soon. And you think still sometime soon?
We put out some levels. I'm looking at it now. I mean, you go back to May of 2022, we're right there. But it shows no signs of bouncing. And, of course, the problem is, I mean, this isn't just a recent development. This is a stock that now has vastly underperformed for basically the last three and a half years. So it's going to find a level. Unfortunately, we've said it for a while. I don't think it's here. Valuation, which was never a concern, becomes a concern. You have and listen to Joe Moglia. What's that show with Brian Sullivan? It's a good show.
Last Call. Last Call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does a nice job.
Oh, yeah.
But Joe Moglia went sort of scorched earth on this new CEO and basically read him the riot act. So they got some problems there without question, not least of which the fact that they sell very expensive things that a strapped consumer is no longer really looking to buy.
I mean, back to sort of our conversation, the A block a little bit. It's suffering similar problems to Nike in that there's so much other competition from smaller rivals. We mentioned Dutch Brothers for a reason, because they are a smaller rival. You walk down the street in New York City, there's probably at least four other smaller coffee chains or coffee stores where you can buy coffee that costs the same, maybe more, maybe probably less.
And might be better, maybe not even.
Exactly.
Right.
But they are out there.
They're out there just like Nike and On and Hoka and Adidas. Right.
Right.
The thing that was sort of odd to me, though, was why did Howard Schultz feel he needed to make that letter public? Right? I don't know what that does. It certainly serves to undermine the CEO, right?
Which he's done before.
Maybe that's not his intention. If it's not, why do you need to do that publicly? Why don't you do it privately? And so that was sort of difficult. I'm wondering, would you rather buy it up meaningfully when things are more on track than try to pick the bottom here?
Yeah.
The issues are that we now don't really know what fiscal 25 EPS is going to look like. And is this a management team that you have confidence to be able to deliver that to you? They've been wrong from the minute they took over, which is about a year ago. So I think that's very much an issue. I think whether Howard Schultz is intentionally undermining management to, you know, give himself a ride back into the helm for the third time, I don't know. But it gets back to then, what's the multiple you want to pay on this? Because if you have some visibility, if you took the EPS multiple for 25 that you had before this announcement, this stock is trading 15 and a half times that 25 multiple. That's very cheap.
If he does come back in, though, you have to wonder if there's truly severe key man risk to this stock, because it seems like Howard Schultz looks like the only one who can run this well.
Which is
then.
Crazy.
If
though.
It's the fourth time that he's going to come back and he has not been able to train his successor.
He's picked bad management teams.
Or he can't.
Or he can't.
Or it doesn't work.
Or it doesn't
I mean, if he comes back and it doesn't work.
Right.
I don't know.
Coming up, more After Hours action to bring you shares of Reddit, Rivian, EA, Wynn, Occidental, all on the move after posting results. The numbers out of the reports next. Plus, has the AI surge come too far too fast and are markets too tied to the fortunes of the poster child of the AI trade? What one billionaire investor has to say about the sector and what it could mean for your money. Details and Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks closing mixed with the Dow notching its fifth day of gains, its longest winning streak since December. The S&P with a small gain, its fourth positive session in a row, and the Nasdaq lower by a tenth of a percent, snapping its own three-day winning streak. More After Hours action to bring you. Reddit jumping after its first earnings report since going public. Shares of EA lower after a revenue miss. Wynn is higher after being on the top and the bottom lines. And Occidental reporting an earnings beat. Meantime, billionaire investor Stanley Druckenmiller comparing artificial intelligence hype to excitement surrounding the internet in 1999. Druckenmiller telling CNBC Squawk Box today that he is as bullish as he's ever been, but diving into these stocks could come at a near-term price.
AI could rhyme with the internet. As we go through all this capital spending we need to do, the payoff, while it's incrementally coming in by the day, the big payoff might be 4 to 5 years from now. So AI might be a little overhyped now, but underhyped long term.
Citi's Stuart Keiser is getting ready for another key earnings period for AI. He's the firm's head of equity trading strategy. Stuart, great to see you. We were not joking, but we actually posed a question last night, or I posed a question to these guys. What is more important, rates and the direction of rates, or NVIDIA's report on May 22nd? So what's your answer?
Well, markets are pricing them about the same, actually. If you look at S&P 500 earnings, the NVIDIA earnings day is priced as big an event as CPI, the FOMC, or payrolls. So the market's kind of with you on this one. I think for equities, frankly, I think NVIDIA might be a little more important at this point, you know, just to kind of confirm the earnings trend we've seen. With rates, to me, it's about rate of change. I mean, if you put 10-year rate at 4.75 and it got pinned there, I think equities can do fine in that environment. If you had a big miss on NVIDIA earnings, I think that kind of eats away that momentum trade, probably a little bit more risk for the markets there.
So it's interesting. I think it's rates, but that's what makes markets, as they say. But was that flush we just saw in NVIDIA a couple weeks ago? I think it got down to 735, 740. I mean, it retraced the entire thing. Was that it, or is there you still anticipate a lot of I'm not playing stock market, but you know, a lot of volatility in this single stock?
Look, it's priced for about a 10% move on earnings. I think to your point, and it kind of speaks to earnings season, early earnings season, you had that Taiwan semi report, you had that ASML report, you had that Netflix report. All those stocks were down double digits. And that got our attention big time, you know, going into TMT earnings. The view was, geez, if those stocks put up okay-ish numbers and are down double digits, what could the rest of this earnings season look like? Big tech delivered and sort of stabilized things. But I think it kind of puts into context how important NVIDIA is for the market. It's being priced as a macro risk, not a single stock risk. And based on how those other stocks reacted to earnings, it's still incredibly important, I think.
But Stuart, if you look at mega cap tech in the form of at least the NASDAQ 100, relative to the S&P, it looks like it made a high in mid-January. Actually, it really made a high back in July and has kind of gone sideways. But there's a bit of a downtrend. So looking for leadership that has come from the mega cap tech stocks, is that concerning to you? And semis have kind of held in. They've kind of, you know, they've at least held serve. And as we've said, NVIDIA is critical. But NASDAQ 100 underperforming the S&P from January in a down channel. And that concerns, I think, leadership.
Yeah, look, the leadership has gotten a little more fragmented this year. Mag 7 was 70% of market cap gains last year. Right now, it's probably in the 40-50% range. Even within that Mag 7, you have, you know, Tesla not performing as well, Meta, you know. So even within that 7, you've had a little bit of lower correlation. So without a doubt, it's in focus. You know, as Stan was talking about with semis, and you mentioned, is semis is key here because you don't know where these AI revenues are going to end up getting distributed and over what time period. So people are investing in the pipes, which in their view is semis and potentially power generation. So I think for the near-term risk-reward, it's those stocks that are probably more important. We are seeing a lot more focus, though, in AI-focused software, for instance, as potentially kind of that next leg. So to your point on semis and NQs, once valuation gets to a certain level, people start looking for what we would call AI adjacent.
Yeah.
And you're looking for, you know, what also benefits from this might not be fully priced. But I think for that adjacency to work, NVIDIA has to keep working, right? That gives you the bravery to like, take that extra step.
So I don't want to quibble with you, but let's say NVIDIA misses because they just can't produce enough. So the demand is still there, but the revenue, you know, the revenue is a little light for whatever reason. That did, not that they are not having the demand. They have more demand than they can fill. Does that change your perspective about NVIDIA's importance to the market?
Well, I think that's your best case miss, right?
You know, right?
We miss because there's too much demand for our stuff. But I think Taiwan Semi kind of came under a similar type of pressure where they were having trouble kind of meeting demand as well. So, you know, there's also talk of, you know, NVIDIA's next gen chip comes out later this year. What is that going to do to kind of the demand profile over the balance of the year? So, yeah, there is a certain case where they might miss numbers, but they might have really good reasons for it. I still think the initial reaction is going to be a little bit risked off just because you're adding uncertainty. But, yeah, big picture, if they miss because they just can't keep up with demand, that is much better than obviously the alternative would be. I agree with you 100%.
Stuart, thanks for coming by. I appreciate it. Stuart Keiser, Citi. Dan, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, listen, the AI adjacent software is not trading well this year. So Adobe, Autodesk, Snowflake, C3 AI, Palantir, there's a whole host of them that are down an awful lot. So I'm not sure that holds a lot of water right here. If anything, that makes me a bit more nervous that investors are not seeing the bright spot. The other thing I'd say about Stan Druckenmiller's comments was an interesting split screen between him and what Eric Schmidt had to say to Andrew Ross Sorkin, because you had, on one sense, Wall Street a bit cynical about it, and then you have, as always, Silicon Valley very optimistic about it. I think we probably meet in the middle right now, because the level of euphoria that's coming out of Silicon Valley about this is being met with some skepticism on Wall Street, and I think that's where the rubber hits the road, and that's why I think NVIDIA guidance is so important. Consensus is already calling for up 80% earnings and sales growth this year. The stock's up more than that. So to Karen's point, I don't care. If they can't guide up and it's not a demand issue, it's a supply issue, the stock's still going down, and it probably causes the sort of downdraft in mega cap tech that we saw from late July last year to late October.
All right, coming up, Rivian down about 4% after hours on the EV maker's latest report. The numbers and the latest from the call next, plus Apple unveiling two new iPads featuring its in-house processor chips. But one of our traders says the chart might be even more interesting than this big reveal. Why he's so intrigued right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Rivian, the EV maker, dropping after hours in Q1 results. A call is underway. Phil Lebeau has the very latest. Phil.
You know, Melissa, I'm listening to the call, and it's just one of those quarters where you go, yeah, it's okay. It's not terrible. The sky is not falling. But there's not a whole lot here if you are a Rivian bull. Let's go through the numbers, and this might explain a little bit of why the stock is under some pressure. A loss of $1.48. The revenue was better than expected, coming in at $1.2 billion. The street was expecting $1.16 billion. But the numbers within the numbers in the first quarter, operating expenses greater than they were in the first quarter of last year at $957 million. Operating cash flow, negative $1.44 billion. The loss per vehicle, just under $39,000. So when you look at their annual deliveries, is there any change in guidance? No. Because their production still comes out. They don't give delivery guidance. They gave production guidance and reaffirmed 57,000 vehicles will be built this year. CapEx guidance does come down by $550 million to $1.2 billion. They are forecasting a modest gross profit in the fourth quarter. They are affirming the guidance that's been out there that they expect to do that by the fourth quarter. That's not enough for some people who look at the fact that they still expect to lose about $2.7 billion this year. One other note from the call, the CFO was talking about what tailwinds are there that they feel confident about. And they talked about the fact that their variable costs should be coming down in the second half of this year due to commodity pressures easing. We will be talking with RJ Scaringe, CEO of Rivian, tomorrow on Squawk Box. Do not want to miss what he has to say. And oh, by the way, Melissa, our friend Adam Jonas asked RJ about the rumor regarding Apple and Rivian having a partnership. As you would expect, RJ said, we don't comment on rumors.
Oh, you can try again tomorrow, though, Phil. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Phil Lebeau. It is just crazy to think that this company loses more than $38,000 per vehicle it sells. Right? I mean, it's mind-blowing.
Put a long-term chart. I remember when the stock came public and the conversations we had about it, the absurdity of the valuation, and people got mad at us. Now it's basically trading at its cash I mean, their cash on the balance sheet is effectively where the stock is trading. Karen,
every
probably
the cash
less.
Today.
Every day
yeah.
there's less.
Yeah. Come on.
I mean,
every car they sell.
39,000 loss per car.
$1.45
yeah. hard to
loss.
Do.
I mean,
and I always think, thank God they didn't make more cars. They'd be done.
So the lifeline is Apple, I guess. Otherwise, there's no compelling reason to own the stock, I don't think.
All right, let's stick with the EV space. And Dan says the recent action Tesla may be creating an opportunity to short the stock. So, Dan, how are you playing this one?
Yeah, and let's be clear, Mel, I wouldn't short this with your money, but there's probably ways to do it in the options market. I'm looking at put calendars, and I'm really trying to target the July Q2 delivery date. That'll be the first week in July. Think back to about a month ago when the company released their Q1 deliveries. The stock gapped and kept on going lower, made a new 52-week low. When we got around to the earnings event, it wasn't as bad as people feared, but the stock had already cratered. So you got that big rally. Then you got Elon's trip over to China, some Fugazi announcement about full self-driving over there, a little robotics, pixie dust going on there, AI infrastructure spend, all of that stuff. Okay, and the stock had a 40% rally off of those lows. Well, here we are this week. The China data, delivery data in April is horrible. That's what the stock was down here. Overall, deliveries were down 8.5% Q1. They're likely to be down more than that in Q2. Look at that negative free cash flow they had in Q1. If we have negative deliveries again, quarter over quarter and year over year, just think about what cash flow is going to look like there. The NHTSA is all up in their grill about full self-driving here. I could just kind of go on and on and on. I think that rally off of those recent lows sets up for a good trading opportunity for those who think that Q2 is going to be worse than Q1. And if the stock market is a discounting mechanism, I think you want to get in front of that, because I do think this stock breaks those lows of 138 that we made last month, and it could be on its way to about $100 this summer. I think there's ways to do it in the options market. We'll keep talking about it.
Dan, if you're so dour on Tesla, then why did you put Rivian in Zebra? Or is that something that you wish you could take out and it would be now Zebra?
Or Zebra.
I wish I could take out. You know, listen, I hate to say this, Sandy. I think these are dumb games that we play with these things. I know we have some fun with it. What I try to do when I play this game is I try to find the most bombed out, worst sentiment names where you can get a lot of leverage. And maybe it goes up 100%. That's how you win your silly game there, Mel.
Yeah. By the way, Sandy's our senior executive producer, man
what
in charge,
like
but he's talking
wall.
Directly.
Love,
at
love
you need to break it down.
Yeah. I mean,
I
guess I'm the only one that plays
bringing
it.
The viewer right. into our world.
No,
I
love the game.
I
love the game. And our viewers love the game.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure they do.
They do. They follow it. They send
us
updates.
I mean, it's a good time.
To love.
Coming up, all the headlines out of Apple's latest iPad event, a number of new products being announced, but it was something else that caught one of our traders' eyes. More on that next. And here's a sneak peek at the Cramer Cam. Jim is chatting exclusively with the CEO of Palo Alto Networks. Catch a full interview, top of the hour on Mad Money. Meantime, more Fast Money in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Apple unveiling new iPads today for the first time since 2022. The latest Air model in new iPad Pro will feature Apple's in-house M2 and M4 chips, a company exec saying that chips give these new devices incredible AI capabilities. But while all this flashy tech has got investors buzzing, we got our eyes on the charts. The stock has been a notable laggard this year, but is up sharply over the past month. So is it ready to bounce? Guy, this is the chart that you were watching.
I'm not a hater. I'm not. But it bounced. You had that gap higher open on very significant volume the other day on what I thought was, and it's just me, I thought it was a fine, it was an okay quarter. I mean, I didn't see anything great. It was better than it was expected, right? People were expecting really bad. They got just bad.
Oh, and a buyback.
And $110 billion. Yeah. That's what, to me, that was most of it. Now, a lot of people say, no, that was a part of it. I'm not in that camp. Nothing's really changed. I mean, now I think it's four out of the last five quarters of negative revenue growth. I mean, that's all out there. Valuation is still stretched, but that gap higher open creates a potential for a gap lower open, similar to what we saw in Facebook. So keep your eyes open and open below sort of 182 tomorrow. And technically, it doesn't look all that good, Melms.
That's sort of what you want, though, going to WWDC.
I don't go to WWDC. There's no way
of going into this event where the highly anticipated AI announcement is going to be made, Tim.
Yeah, look, I would never count Apple out, especially with that installed base. I look at a chart and I see underperformance to the S&P, even with those great numbers or that great buyback of almost 18% from December 8th. I mean, it's been a disaster relative to the S&P. I don't know that that's not going to, you know, continue.
Up next, Final Trade. Final Trade, Dan.
Yeah, I think Tesla's recent bounce sets up a really interesting opportunity in the options market to make a bearish bet into the Q2 deliveries in early July.
Tim?
Yeah, fun show tonight. Utilities. We talked about power adjacency. How about utilities outright have bucked the trend against rates?
Karen?
Yes. Citibank. Better see.
Happy day after birthday to Tim.
Day after birthday.
Ranger hockey tonight, Melms. You're watching. OIH.
Thanks for watching Fast. Mad Money starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.